Welcome back to the MMO Podcast. My name is Kyle Devitt, and I am the gear and lifestyle editor at Inside Lacrosse, and I am joined, as always, by IL MLL writer Chris Rosenthal. Chris, what is good?
What's up, Kyle? What's the theme of this past weekend? Kind of hoping to get some more light shined on who's going to the postseason, but maybe leaving the spots up for grabs even still?
Yeah, it's like teams that already have it don't want it. They don't care. They already got it, but they're still winning. And then the teams that really want it didn't get it. So we're going to start out. We're going to go right into that aspect of it. We're going to do the weekend recap for week 12. Our first game, the Dallas Rattlers 14, the Charlotte Hounds 9. Chris, maybe the Rattlers belonged in Texas all along. Another game, another dominant win. Dallas is in first place at 9-2. Undefeated at home, and clinched a playoff spot with this win. Who beats this Rattlers team right now? Because it ain't Charlotte at all. And I personally think something is up with the Hounds.
So let's go start with the first part there real quick. Who beats this Rattlers team? Any given weekend, nobody necessarily. You know what I mean? Like, I would not say there's one team that hands down would assume would have the victory over them. And I think that's because Dallas just checks every single box. And there's kind of an upper tier right now in the league, and they all have to check every single box. You know, you got solid face-off work, solid defense, just absolutely everything. Goalie play, outstanding. And I think that's what's kind of separated, you know, like I said, a tier of certain guys from certain others. But let's jump back to that, what you just said. Charlotte, what were you thinking there?
I just think that it isn't the league catching up with their early start because they look like they're completely off the rails. I don't know if that's the dominance of Rochester. Rochester, I did it. I almost made it the whole season. Come on, Kyle. Dallas Rattlers. I think that it might be a result of them playing Dallas, but they looked straight up bad. They couldn't string together passes. They had like four or five possessions where they couldn't get two passes off. The entry pass into the possession was off, and that guy was off balance and had to chase it down. I mean, we need to get dialed in here, folks. We're in week 12. This is a home stretch. You're not dialed in to get into your offense? Really? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, as good as Dallas is and was, you know, the flip side of that coin is, you know, some glaring errors and difficulties just in execution from the Hounds that isn't going to get the win done, especially against a team of Dallas's caliber. Something I just kind of liked, especially from Dallas, was the depth they kind of were able to exploit. Bringing Randy Stotts back into the lineup, three goals, and he kind of jumped into a tricky situation because the role that we had seen previously, you know, he playing on various teams heading into this, kind of was already spoken for. You know, they didn't really need to have someone do what Randy Stotts traditionally does. And, you know, are you, like, going to work him on the crease? But they've got Ty Thompson there. You know, he's going to work out almost like midfielder coming in and out of the box. So that's not something we've seen, you know, really Stotts doing probably since Syracuse days, like the first half of his year before they kind of adjusted their lineup there. But, you know, it still worked out with him there. And a team like that that can kind of rebuild itself and remold itself is probably what's going to kind of burst ahead of the pack at this sort of, you know, sort of weird season we're going to have with the World Games.
Yeah, it's interesting. The one of the things that stood out for me was obviously the Rattlers' defense is so good. But the guy who, like, really helps to make it run besides Galloway is Mike Manley, who this week won our Maverick Power by the Player. And he did it. He got there because he had all these ground balls, and he creates turnovers by just existing in the right place. You know, I think everyone's probably going to watch that run that he had. They're going to watch Rambo's run against him where he took Rambo's helmet off. Fair enough.
Right.
Fair enough. But he also held Rambo down for the rest of the game. Like, he plays lights out defense, and he's like not scared to carry the ball. He makes good decisions. And it's interesting, when I interviewed him, he was like, well, I only missed last season because I was becoming a state trooper. I was in shape. I could have played. And he was very adamant. He said, I have not lost a step. So that's scary, because I don't even know if he's the number one defenseman. I think he's a matchup play defenseman, which is crazy because he's that good. You know, like, who is the number one guy for the Rattlers? Is it done? I mean, I feel like it's probably done, but is, you know, Sexton's playing now. Joel White's out there doing whatever he wants, just making people look silly. Dallas has so many weapons on the defensive end that it's unfathomable to me that they're able to – teams are going to be able to score more than 15 goals against them. I just don't see it happening. You're going to have to make sure that they can't score. And no one has been able to stop them defensively either.
Yeah. You know, Dallas's defense is kind of for what about the Denver offense? You know, there's so many different sorts of weapons on defense. Everybody kind of has these different roles. And like you mentioned, Sexton, he's kind of fit in and just – he's almost kind of fit into the cracks and – you know, been stellar at his certain things. You know, he's not taking away, like, you're not going to enter a situation where you're like, is this a Manley job or a Sexton job?
Right.
You know, is this a Joel White job or a Dunn job? Everybody kind of has their own deal. And it's all just kind of working together. Nine goals, you know, even Charlotte, like we said, they've had their difficulties and things weren't going well for them. But I mean, you know, single digits in this league is always outstanding. And you did mention Rambo. He's got to get that helmet situation under control at this point, right? I mean, how many times is man's helmet going to fly off in a lacrosse game? It's personally never happened to me.
I mean, it's happened to me. But I think that I'm probably more prone to getting laid out than you are just by virtue of my mouth when I play. So, yeah, I think that it's probably because he ducks into stuff. And also he wears it a little loose. And I mean, where is it going to sit? Because there isn't much of a neck there, right? Like, it's just, it looks like his head just goes into his shoulders, like an action figure. So, like, where, there's only one place to put your stick trying to push him down if you slide up his shoulder, and that's into his helmet, and that's what knocks it off. So, hopefully, you know, he finds one that he can strap on there and keep tight. Let's move on to our next game. The Chesapeake Bayhawks 16, the New York Lizards 13. I have to say, New York looked toothless for long stretches, and this loss definitely hurts their chances of getting in the playoffs. I think Chesapeake's defense was the star here, despite giving up requisite point totals to Pinnell and Manny. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree. The defense was the star, kind of anchored by Nico Amato coming up with the huge stops again. You know, not just big amount of saves, but you get, you know, the Point Blake saves that could kind of really change the complexion of a game. He was just huge on things like that and leading to, you know, strong transition plays. This is the kind of stuff that really takes the wind out of any sort of, you know, New York comeback attempts. And like we're just saying about Dallas, you know, you still get, you know, the successful teams are ones that can shine with depth, you know, and like Colin Heacock was running out the box, you know, dropping two pointers last week and then he's dropping down to attack. Fill in for Matt Donowski this week and, you know, still dominating. Nate Loon's coming in and contributing. You know, if you just get people who, you know, you got to have these rosters that aren't just, you know, a top layer of superstars. You know, shot Mark Glycini once again, hopping in the cage and making a save, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, it's tough to counter that these waves that can just keep going with player after player.
Yeah, and a debut for Jeremy Seaver. It's a goal and two assists. Only took two shots. You know, it's impressive. That's a volume shooter fitting into a brand new situation and becoming a little bit of a distributor, maybe like upping his game a little bit to fit in with this team who still has yet to see Lyle Thompson suit up for them. I mean, how much better does Chesapeake get when Lyle plays? You know, that's crazy to me. And they're the only team that I think kind of even sniffs Dallas right now. You know, they're only a half game behind them in the table, so it's not conceivable that they have, you know, the best. They all are the best two teams. I don't think anyone would have argued that. But I think that Chesapeake has the things that maybe Dallas doesn't have, and that's they have a ton more midfielders that can do almost anything, right? They don't – maybe they don't have the dominant dodger like Jordan Wolf at attack, but they have four or five guys at midfield that can cover and shoot and pass and dodge. And that's really rare in the MLL. So I think that's a big part of their strength is their adaptability. Obviously, I started off kind of maligning New York. Where are we at this point that we still consider New York an elite team? Because I don't think we can anymore, right? We've had this discussion. We're like, oh, and then they get a big win. We're like, oh, we're back in the tank for them. I'm not there. I'm out. I'm totally out. Until they win like three in a row, then I'll be back in. You got to win three in a row to get me back because I can't believe in this team, even though Tommy Kelly was sick. You know, 20 for 31, six ground balls. He was one of the best players for them, and they still didn't win.
Yeah. They are definitely kind of in a sort of purgatory where they're not quite in that upper level, like regardless of the standings themselves, you know, like are they a playoff team? If they are, it is quite literally they are a playoff team because they are, you know, fourth right now or something like that. You know what I mean? Like Charlotte seems to be collapsing and Florida, well, we'll get to them in a second, but I mean, New York is there right now, but I think that really says a lot about everybody else. Not so much about New York that they are still in that picture. They have their work cut out for them, and you know, especially what is going to happen to this roster when everybody starts coming back, and if it's going to be enough. You know, a lot of questions for them. Even if they do sort of get in, they definitely don't seem to be equipped to run with these other teams.
I thought it was the defense for a long time. And now yeah. I realize that I think it's the mentality of if you're preparing for the Lizards, you're not scared of the Lizards. I don't think I'm scared of Rob Pinnell. I think I let Rob Pinnell get 5 points. I think I let Rob Pinnell shoot 10 times. You know what I mean? I think mm-hmm. I try to shut down Will Manny and I'm slow to go on everyone else. I don't yeah. see anyone else being able to spread the field with any sort of consistency enough for me to worry about them and specifically put a matchup guy on them. You know, you can defend every player on this team. Every player. They all have a weakness. And they're so good. That's the crazy – this thing that's like upsetting me is they're so good. But then – they have games where, like, they're average. You know, they're, like, replacement-level player. And you're like, wait a minute. You're, like, the best player in the world. Why are you not scoring, like, 20 goals? Like, what's going on? You know, I think that no one's scared of them anymore. And I think that people were. And now it's not just the defense. I don't think they're scared of anybody on that team. So, yeah, that's kind of my take on Chesapeake beating New York. Let's move on to our next game. The Ohio Machine, 13. Florida Launch, 11. Chris the Machine are back. Also,
there we go.
Also, has Tucker Durkin been arrested for the assault that he committed on Justin Gutterding? Is Gutterding okay? I was mentally shook when I saw replays of their battle. What was your takeaway from that situation?
My takeaway was, as I saw, you know, Tucker Durkin's coverage throughout the week on, you know, like Twitter and stuff like that, you know, I think the captions a lot of times were like, you know, check out this strong defense by Tucker Durkin. And I mean, I don't really think even Tucker Durkin wants that to be on his highlight reel. I mean, just swinging from everywhere. And, you know, I think everybody involved is fortunate that a lot of those checks didn't make contact with anything. Because, I mean, it was all just a mess, just giant sword swings. And, I mean, you know, I'm sure that's not his finest work. And, you know, and the ball didn't leave Gutterding's stick on the particular play that kind of made its way around social media. So, I mean, Tucker Durkin seems like a violent, scary dude, more so than even just being good at defense, which I think is what we generally regard him for being. Yeah, man, just lowered his head and just kind of went to work on Gutterding. I wondered during the game, like, I was kind of trying to think where their paths may have crossed or something. I was like, this seems personal.
Well, he was mad that he made him trip. I think that's what it was, because he did trip on the back of the net.
He did. He did twice, actually, which is something I wasn't traditionally used to seeing from Tucker Durkin. Maybe he was just having a bad day and was angry about it.
Yeah, what was scarier, the first two-handed swing or the wild backswing that missed everything? Because I think it's the second one. The first one, I'm like, oh. But the second one where the stick doesn't hit anything and he realizes it at the end of his swing and then just immediately rips it back. That was like watching a butcher cut meat. That was scary.
Right, right. The second one is, I think, always the scariest, because it's like if you think like a bar brawl is about to break out and somebody yells something that makes everybody uncomfortable and then you're like, whoa. But then the second time is when he's like, yeah, I said it. And that's when it's about to go down. And I think the yeah, I said it was, you know, the Durkin's second swing there.
Yeah. Well, we got to move on and talk about some other stuff in this game. We were talking about Gutterding. I think he's advanced to a point where, like, I can no longer doubt him or his ability ever again. Because during the NCAA season, I was like, he's so underrated, he's so underrated, he's so underrated. And then it came time where we did Tour Time Watch on the In the Crease podcast, and I, like, forgot about him. And then I realized that I was the one that was underrating him. I was ignoring my own advice, and I won't do it again. So I want to talk plot about him every twist. Time he has a good game. Yeah, plot twist. I don't even listen. I don't even listen to myself. He was great. You know, we saw Dominique Alexander come back here. I thought he had more of an impact than people probably expected on that defense. Jackson Place made our team of the week with his just – the thing about Jackson Place is that he doesn't get a lot of opportunities to showcase his best skill, which is matching feet with quick guys.
Yeah. No.
Like, he did that straight up, because guys like Kieran McArdle, they beat you – with footwork as much as they do physicality, and you can't do that with Place. You cannot beat him with footwork, because his footwork is so good. I think it's what makes him one of the better interior and perimeter defenders in the league. And then, Chris, who is Frank Brown?
Frank Brown is the revelation of revelations, Ohio legend, as of 1 week ago.
Yeah, new legend.
Just... yeah, brand new legend in Ohio. You know, Ohio needs a hero again. LeBron has gone to the West Coast, and the man to take LeBron's place, I think it's not overreacting to say that is Frank Brown.
Yeah.
Frank Brown is the hero Ohio needs, and the hero Ohio deserves. And just a monster all over. I mean, he's running, like, two-man games. He's setting up inverts, coming out the box. Just doing anything that they could possibly ask of him, just doing it at will. And let me just say this about Frank Brown. I absolutely love that Frank Brown's name is Frank Brown, because I think it is a perfect name for the role of a guy who just shows up and dominates. He's like, so there's this movie, like The Substitute or something, where like Tom Berenger was like a special forces guy who like goes in and starts beating up gang members who are working at a high school. Like, I don't know what that character's name was, because I never actually saw that movie, but I feel like it should have been Frank Brown. It is such a no-nonsense name.
Yeah. I got a question, though. Did you know who he was before you saw him score three goals and dish two assists. Don't lie.
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay, good. I'm not going to say I knew exactly who he was, but I went, Frank Brown. Is that the Frank Brown from Hobart? And when I looked it up, I've never been happier with any Google search result in my life. Just because I had that much recall to bring that back and be like, I remembered who Frank Brown was. And then I realized I probably should have known who he was anyway. So I shouldn't celebrate that. But I'm glad we got that all on the table. For the launch, it's not that something's up with this team. I just think that they're not playing to their strengths. You know, this is a team that needs to press. They need to get out on you. They need to get you out of your comfort zone. And now they're like not even getting back on defense. And they're doing silly stuff in the box, like not knowing when to sub and who to sub. Like that's not a team. That's not the team that made the playoffs last year. Right. And right. The thing is, their talent is better. Their talent is, I think the talent on this team is better. You know, Jules Henningberg is very good. Wasn't great in this game, didn't get a lot of opportunities, but is a very good player. Kieran McArdle, very good player. You know, Dylan Malloy showed that he was a good player, also made our team of the week, 4 goals and an assist. But like Connor Bucic just having 2 goals, you know, Mariano only having a goal, Brooks only having a goal. I mean, it's just not going to cut it. You know, this team asked, if you're going to score 11 goals, you have to be so good defensively that you have to make sure the other team doesn't score 10 to win in the MLL. And that's crazy hard. We talked about that earlier with, you know, the previous game with Charlotte not being able to make 10 goals. It's essential to play to your strengths. And I think that Florida keeps shuffling what they think their strength is. And I'm here to tell you, Florida, your strength is your grit. Your strength is your perimeter defense and your ability to alter shots so Austin Cowell can get quick outlets and you can beat feet and beat the other team. It's not anything else. I know you think it's other stuff. It's not. I'm going to be honest with you. That's the deal. What are your thoughts?
I think, you know, especially the way that this game played out, you had Dylan Malloy who was kind of just doing whatever he wanted. You would think in that situation there would be a little more rising from the others. You know, we did mention Jackson Place having a solid game. But it does seem like they're kind of searching for a sense of a midfield identity that I think teams really need for consistent offensive production. And it seems like, you know, you have Connor Bucic who is capable. And, you know, when he was drawing short stick matchups, he was, you know, like, okay, I'm going straight to the goal. But other than that, a lot of it seemed a bit too more like what the opposing team was giving them, trying to adjust to that instead of imposing your offensive will on them. And it just like 11 goals with the attack that you have seems like you should get more out of the midfield.
Yeah, you know who would have been great for that?
I knew. Who's that?
Sergio Salcido.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of people knew I was going to say that, especially the launch fans.
Yeah.
Exactly. But hey, Ohio's back. Scotty Raj doing big things. He's back.
Machine back in it.
Yeah.
Don't count him out yet.
Led by, you know, the guy who I think looks like a wandering arm wrestler. Just looking for the next mark. Just looking for the next guy. I feel like Scotty Raj could be like a Russian bad guy in any movie ever right now. Just shows up. Doesn't say anything. He can't talk with the accent, but like just shows up places and just wears like a suit and you get like a little spider tattoo and he's good. I feel like that's his calling.
And if that takes place, you know who would jump out of a helicopter in the dead of night and sneak up and take him down?
Who's that?
Frank Brown.
Oh, that's what we like to call a full circle callback. All right, we're going to go into our next segment, which is our standings recap. And since we're going into the international break and there won't be an MLL podcast next week, there might be some other kind of podcast. We're going to go all the way down going into this break. At number one, the Dallas Rattlers at 9-2. At number two, the Chesapeake Bayhawks at 8-2. At number three, the Denver Outlaws at 7-4. At number four, the Charlotte Hounds at 6-6. At number five, the New York Lizards at 5-6. At number six, the Atlanta Blaze at 4-6. At number seven, the Florida Launch at 4-7. Number eight, the Boston Cannons at 3-8. And unfortunately still in last place, but apparently not mathematically eliminated, the Ohio Machine at 3-8. Can Frank Brown save this team? We're going to find out.
If anyone could.
Well, I mean, if anyone could, it's Frank Brown. You know who we should ask about that, though?
Is it?
That's our player interview this week. Ohio Machine midfielder and lacrosse legend, Kyle Harrison. We'd like to welcome into the MLL podcast Ohio Machine midfielder and all-around legend, also great guy, Kyle Harrison. What's up, man? How you doing?
Hanging in there, fellas. Hanging in there. How are we doing over there? Thanks for having me.
It's going great. Going great. We're going to do a quick regular four, you know, fun, easy questions, but fun questions, and then we'll finish with four questions that we kind of ask all of our guests. I'm going to go first. Have you ever had an experience in lacrosse like you've had in the last two seasons with the Machine? Because you won a championship and then you kind of have been injured a little bit this year and you watch that team basically move on piece by piece. How has that process been for you?
I got to tell you, man, it's been interesting, right? Like, I think, you know, clearly we went on a nice run, like a 4-year run of playoff, you know, championship game loss, and then eventually winning a championship last year. And then this year we've had our struggles for various reasons. And I think, you know, it's all part of the process. I think when you look at our roster and things that have happened from, you know, our guy Tom being banged up coming into the season, you know, you don't want to blame things on an injury or blame things on one particular thing. But, you know, when you have the best player in the world on your team, a lot of the things we do flow through him on the offensive side of the ball. So with him out, I think all of a sudden we get guys, all of us are in positions that maybe for the past 2 years we haven't been in, because Tom just gets the ball on his stick. So I think there was an adjustment period, and then you add in, you know, Peter being in law school, missing the first couple, and then I, you know, strain a hammy and now I'm out. So all of a sudden we went from a team that kind of had the same roster for 4 years to a team that's, you know, just plugging in somebody new every week. And that's not a shot against the guys that have played, because we've had incredible rookies step in and do a lot for us. We've had guys that have come out of the player pool that have done an incredible job for us. And it's just a matter of chemistry, right? Like, I think in this league, it's about chemistry and your comfortability with your teammates and things you guys can do together, and kind of knowing what the guy that's on your midfield line or your attack line or your, you know, that's playing defense with you, kind of knowing what that guy's going to do. And I think, you know, we've been in a situation this year in Ohio that it's just been a lot of feeling out every game. I think Coach said we haven't had the same roster one time this year, which is crazy for us, right? Because we're a team that we always have the same roster. So I guess to answer the original question of have I ever experienced anything like this, no, I haven't. But at the same time, you know, we just found out that we are not officially mathematically out of the playoff hunt. And so it's just a matter of, you know, you got to win out and put yourself in a position that, you know, maybe have a chance in the end.
Now, as for off-field endeavors, you recently took on a new position as president and CEO, if I have that correct, of Charm City Lacrosse.
Yeah.
How did that gig kind of come to be, and what has it been like so far, kind of as opposed to what you imagined it would be heading in?
Yeah, I'm still feeling it out, man. I think for me, I've been on the board of Charm City for the past 3 years. And so as my family and I have kind of migrated from the West Coast back to the East Coast and just recently got settled in Severna Park, Maryland, it seemed only natural that I was going to get more involved in different lacrosse things going on in Baltimore. And then obviously with me being on the board, Charm City made the most sense to kind of dive into head first. So again, as of now, not too much has changed. You know, we just had a great spring season. Our ED does an incredible job, Artie.
really runs the show. And so I'm still feeling out, understanding how the organization runs, seeing where I can help out, seeing how I can get my partners and sponsors involved to create an even better experience for the kids. But it's been a lot of fun, man. It's been a learning experience, and I'm looking forward to the fall and kicking off all of our fall programming.
With Team USA now in Israel going for a gold medal, what sort of emotions does that conjure up for you? And also, what is your best Team USA story?
Man, it's just, you know what's interesting? And I think I'm an old man now. Maybe that's why I feel this way. I felt like, I said to my wife the other day, I feel like the sense of pride, you know, of like, that I was on the national team. I'm an alumni of the national team now. And just like, I'm so excited for those guys, man. I have great relationships with so many guys on the team. Obviously, with Seth Tierney, he is my mentor, one of my closest friends. He was the offensive coordinator at Hopkins when I was there, and I've just had an incredible relationship with him, you know, since getting to school. So he's a guy I care a lot about. And I want it to go well, you know, and so just the feeling I have, I'm excited and, you know, paying attention to everything going on over there and trying to keep in communication with the guys I have relationships with, whether that's Paul or Tommy or Marcus or whoever it is, and just telling them we're all back here supporting them and can't wait to watch them play.
And what's your best Team USA story?
My best story?
Yeah.
Oof. I don't know, man. What are my good Team USA stories? See, you're making me think back, like, literally. I mean, my first Team USA situation was 2005. So we're talking a long time ago, man. I don't know. I guess one of my most exciting moments as when I turned from college to pro was AJ Hogan was like my guy. You know, huge fan. He's a guy I first saw him play, made me want to be a Hopkins midfielder. And then when I tried out for Team USA in 2005, he was my roommate for the weekend. So I got to fire millions of questions at him, spend time with him off the field. It was an incredible experience. So I know it's not too exciting of a story, but when I look back on my time with Team USA, that's certainly one of the fondest memories I have.
It definitely doesn't beat the Chaz Woodson I got my arm stuck in a vending machine story. But
oh my gosh. Yeah, no, man, I stay in my lane. I don't know what he was doing that his arm was in a vending machine. So I'd be curious to ask him about that portion of the story. Like, there's no need for his arm to be in there. But yeah, no, I don't have anything like that.
No, that's good.
So I'm glad you mentioned the AJ Hogan thing. Kind of works out perfectly here. You recently posted a picture of Austin Sims from way back in the day, and then, you know, you two with the All-Star game.
Yep.
And we've seen some guys, kind of like Miles Jones, I think, put something on Instagram with two of you. And yep. They kind of mention, you know, looking up to you, or somebody says, like, they modeled their game after you, tried to get the shake, like, you got the shake. What's it like to have kind of like a signature style that you're seeing now peers citing as an inspiration? And has that ever felt like additional pressure along the way?
You know what, man? I think it's incredible. It's humbling. Even hearing you say that, I got chills just thinking about it, man. My lacrosse career, I've been so fortunate with the things I've got to experience, the people I've gotten to meet, with the places I've gotten to play. You know, coming out of Friends, I really never expected any of this, right? Like, I didn't know if it was going to work. My plan, when I committed to Hopkins and then I got there in the fall, the plan was like, by junior year, hopefully I can find some time on the field. And so, you know, getting there and then having it go well, being on the first mid field as a freshman, and then just the trajectory that things have kind of been on since, man, it's all so unexpected. So the pressure, like, I've never felt pressure because I didn't expect any of this. And then in terms of just how the feeling of having guys say stuff like that, man, it's incredible. It's incredible. And it's, you know, I'm a guy that doesn't look back all that much. I haven't throughout my career, and I just kind of feel as I've gotten older and gained more perspective, and you spend time around the Matt Strebels of the world, the Jay Jalbert, the Casey Powell, the John Grant Jr., just the legends of this game, and you kind of see how reflective they are and how much they've meant to the game. It's been important to me recently to kind of take a minute, especially with this injury, you know, standing on the sideline at that All-Star game and being next to Austin Sims, who was literally like, I don't even know what grade that picture was, man. I mean, homeboy was literally in like fourth or fifth grade, you know, that I took a picture with him, and now we're on the field together. Like, the whole thing has been really incredible. You know, Tom Schreiber and I had a moment early in the season where he and I were walking off the field for warm-ups, and we usually stay a little bit afterwards and shoot. We're heading to the locker room, and there were two kids running, playing with each other. One had a Schreiber jersey on. One had a Harrison jersey on. We're like, that dude, that's incredible. Like, I would have never pictured that. And, you know, I'm thinking it from my perspective of, like, I would have never thought that, you know, a guy or kid would be in my jersey at a game. And then Tom, from Tom's perspective, it's like, you know, Tom was a guy that I guess looked at me a little bit when he was growing up as a midfielder he wanted to play like, and now he's got a kid in his jersey walking with a kid in my jersey. So the whole thing is a bit surreal, man, and it's something I don't take for granted, and it's just really humbling.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to move on to a little more easier questions. We'll give you an opportunity to pump your sponsor a little bit. What stick do you use, and who strings it?
So here's the deal, man. So I'm like the original Stallion. You remember the ones from like almost a decade ago? I refuse to switch. And like we've come out with multiple Stallions since and all that good stuff. And so currently I'm still using the OG Stallion on a Stallion handle. But with that said, I just had an Ultra Power strung up the way that I like my Stallion strung. And the reason I haven't switched sticks in so long is because these new heads, like the wider heads, it's tougher to string the same channel that I'm used to playing with for over a decade, you know? So I just haven't changed. So right now it's a Stallion on a Stallion. Well, week or whenever we have now, I think I might try the Ultra Power.
Wow.
I'm nervous, though. I don't know, man. I think I'll probably practice with it and then ultimately decide to go with the Stallion.
Right. Who strings it? Do you do a... Yeah, the guy who does it.
You know what? So biggest regret for my lacrosse career is that I never learned how to string sticks. So it's just like if something goes wrong, I just have to have like four or five backups that have strung the same way that I can just pick up and go with it. I have a guy at STX, Troy, who strings my sticks, and I've got a couple of different guys, but currently Troy is stringing them.
It's super easy. If I can do it, literally anyone can do it.
Dude, that's the thing, man. I feel like I'm so deep into this thing now. Like, I can't go back. I'm not going to learn how to string a stick.
No, but you learn now with all the tricks. You learn now with all the tricks. All the tricks are easy now. Back in the day, like, stringing sticks is like redefines itself every 2 or 3 years. That's why it's cool. That's why it's fun.
Yeah, man. Nope, can't go backwards, dude. If I got like a half an hour, 45 minutes at home, and my kids are asleep, and there's nothing going on, the last thing I want to do is try to learn how to string a stick.
It's fair.
That's so real.
You gotta value your time, bro. Go outside, shoot some jumpers, maybe catch up on a show. Who knows?
Perfect. What is the last great movie you saw? And following that, what is the worst movie that you've seen recently? I haven't seen one recently. Just what jumps out at you as some hot garbage?
So here's... Hot garbage got me. Here's what I'm going to say. I was a movie guy. Like, movies were my thing, going to movies. My wife and I loved it. And then since the babies came along, there's just literally no time to do it. So I haven't been to the theater in a really, really long time. I would say the new Avengers, whenever I do get to see it, is probably going to be the best one that I've seen in a while. And funny you bring up the worst one, because I just got in an argument with my cousin a couple days ago. Do you guys remember the movie Into the Gray? Liam Neeson.
Oh yeah.
So hold on. So the whole reason I wanted to see the movie was because, do you remember in the preview there was that scene where like him and the wolf were running at each other and like a fight's about to jump off? Do you remember that from the previews?
Yeah.
Yep.
Like it made you like, yo, I gotta see what happened with that fight. So we're in a hotel, like, I can't remember, 6 months ago. That movie's there. I'm like, yo, we never saw it. I'll rent that joint. So we rent it. Movie is terrible whole way through. Like, it's just getting worse. Every minute that passes, it's a little worse than the minute before. And then we finally get to the end. And, like, it's him and the wolf, and they're running at each other. And then the joint ends. It ends before they fight. It just fades to black, and it's over. And so, I mean, to say that I was upset, I spent 2 hours cussing, throwing stuff, punching walls, punching pillows. But that is my worst movie I've seen ever. Ever.
But like Liam Neeson's is like 60. Come on,
yo! But I just can't. I could not. I was dumbfounded. I had so many questions. I was like, yo, when they were making this movie, nobody thought like, yo, that's the scene everyone's gonna want to see. So we need to actually have that be a scene. Like, it literally was them running at each other, and then it just credits roll. I almost lost my mind.
Spoilers for The Gray, guys.
I'm sorry about that. You don't see it. Just don't see it.
You're doing everybody a favor there, really.
Oh, so bad.
All right. who, this is another big one. Who is your favorite team sports athlete and who is your favorite individual sports athlete?
So tough. I'm going to go LeBron for team sports. Probably Serena for individual sports.
I think Serena's like a three-time champ.
Yeah, man. She's on this pod.
She gets brought up a lot for the individual sports. Shout to everybody for being open-minded and stuff. It's awesome.
He's for real.
Yeah.
He's for real.
Finally, the last one for you. Where can people follow you on social media? And finally, recommend a song for our summer MLL playlist. Any style you choose.
Oh, no. Well, my name on all social channels is at KyleHarrison18. So holler at me there. Secondly, RJ over at PLN has challenged me to a one-on-one basketball game. And so make sure you follow me because we're going to film that in a couple weeks. And I'm not taking it off on him at all. I'm literally going to try and beat him 21-0. So that should be entertaining. And then as far as my song, you really just put me on the spot there, man. Hold on. Let me pull up my most recent joints here. MLL playlist. Let's see. Well, first off, keep in mind I'm 35, right? So these young boys, I was literally just in the car with Lil Manny, and he was playing some stuff I've never heard before that apparently the kids are into. So my stuff is not current. Let's see. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, man, this recent playlist isn't good.
Just one song you really like that you listen to frequently.
I'd probably say Ambition, Wale, Meek Mill.
Okay, it's going on the playlist. That's it.
Fellas, you didn't want to hear the rest of the playlist. It's not good.
I mean, we had a dude pick Springsteen, Born to Run on here a couple weeks ago, so.
That's not good either.
Yeah. No, it might have been your boy McMahon. I'm not going to lie to you.
Oh, my gosh. Poor guy. He's been confused lately. He's got a lot going on. That makes sense.
Life's tough. All right. We really want to thank you for coming on the podcast and joining us.
Of course.
Always a pleasure to speak with you about all things MLL and your career, which is amazing. You are, to me, a legend and one of, if not the best player, all-around player to ever play. So it's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming on, and good luck the rest of the season.
I really appreciate it, fellas. I appreciate all you guys do for the pro game. I think it's important, right? I think there's when it comes to reporting and caring and doing meaningful articles, meaningful podcasts, I speak on behalf of all the players. You really appreciate all you guys do.
All right. So Kyle Harrison, doing great things, entertaining as always. What did you think?
I would definitely agree with that. Passionate man about the music selections, movie, a lot going on there. Appreciate the enthusiasm.
He's not a fan of the Liam Neesons.
No, no, sir.
That was tough. That was tough. Cause I remember watching that movie and being like, when is that scene? And then I realized halfway through the movie, because I watch a lot of movies, that scene is the last scene. And I was like, oh, right. I guess I'll keep watching this. But he doesn't have that. Unfortunately, I wish that I could have told him. It would have been like, save yourself. Don't do it. But we all make our choices. All right. We're going to go into our recommendations of the week. And mine's, I don't think it's a little weird, but I think it's fun. It's like a nice summer watch. I don't know about you. When I'm a little bored, I'll pop on the YouTubes. I'm not big into YouTube. I only follow like 100 people or something. So my feed is not super clogged, but I occasionally come across like the recommended stuff. And I found this YouTube channel called Odin Makes. And it's a YouTube channel where a giant dude named Odin makes props from movies out of like stuff that's hanging around. I mean, he's got a shop and he's a machinist and he's skilled and all that. But this week he made the Ant-Man helmet out of foam cutouts from workout mats and made the eye holes by filing down a punch bowl.
Weird.
It was amazing. I mean, I like stuff being built. I like watching that, I like the before and after stuff. It's highly recommended. It's super fun. It's just a YouTube channel called Odin Makes. I would start with the Infinity Gauntlet because he made the Infinity Gauntlet. And you got to watch that. It's awesome. Check that out.
I will do so. I haven't heard of this gentleman, but I will check out his work. My recommendation is a homemade recommendation. It's a personal one. In an effort to make the summer of 2018, the greatest summer ever, I am releasing 3 mixtapes for those with the benefit of Spotify. And I don't know, maybe I'll like tweet out the playlists or something like that for people who don't have Spotify. The first one that came out, I think, Memorial Day weekend. Summertime Mixtape Volume 1, The Hammock Mix, which was the smoothed out, laid back, sitting in a hammock or driving with your car windows down feel to them. The second one just came out today on Spotify, but I haven't even tweeted a link or something. But by the time everybody hears this, it'll be out there. This one is Summertime Mixtape Volume 2, The Barbecue Mix. It is, I want to say, 25 or 26 songs that I would personally play if I were inviting all of you to my barbecue. All sorts of decades, I think 70s through 2000s. I don't know if this decade, but still got a few decades in there. And, you know, it's got a whole flow to it. It goes sequence-wise and attitude-wise, so by the time you're at the end, it's a little more relaxed. As with any barbecue, it's getting dark and late, and you want your friends to leave. So if you have Spotify, check that out. And if not, just keep an eye on social media, and I'll tweet something out about it.
We're just dropping mixtapes. We got the MLO podcast playlist. I mean, we're basically just providing so much free entertainment. I mean, feel free to, like, Venmo us or whatever, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. We're just like lacrosse riders. We're not rolling in it. There's a reason it's not called the Yacht Mix. Right?
That's true. Absolutely. Yeah, we will take your money if you're giving it away.
Yeah, give us money. all right, had a don't get fired moment there. Okay, the next up is the weekend preview, but this is awkward. There's no games. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about the World Championships. First off, Chris, how do you feel about the World Games?
So I'll say this about the World Games. It is, like, I kind of view the World Games same way I feel about, like, lacrosse in the Olympics and, like, the lacrosse emoji. Like, I understand that it is something that other people are extremely passionate about and would make people very, very happy. So I am very, very happy that people have found something that makes them very, very happy. In that regard, I am not as emotionally invested in it. I'll be rooting for my country, especially because, you know, they've had a couple hardships recently and they've, you know, run into a tough Canadian squad. And I also think knowing some Canadians on Twitter has kind of helped me in that regard, too. I'm kind of like, okay, I want to kind of talk a little trash about, you know, our squads going against each other. That being said, the rest of it, it's other people's bags. I will be watching the games because, you know, I like watching sports, but it's not something, I am not the person whose blood pressure gets going for it, equivalent to a lot of other people out there. And for those people, we're very excited for them. I feel like it's a lot of opening acts with a couple headliners, just the disparity between some teams and, you know, the rest of the nations. But like I said, it's fun for people. So, you know, I'm happy the time is here and I will root for them to have a good time.
Well, I'll be honest. I'm glad you had a very diplomatic take, because we're going to take a quick turn into unpopular take land. I think that World Games lacrosse is bad lacrosse. Not the tournament. The tournament is great for all that it does to spread the sport. Okay. I acknowledge that. I think that's awesome. I'm glad that all these countries are experiencing this sport. I think it's the greatest sport ever. I want you all to experience it. But international rules are conducive to bad lacrosse. And the talent level for some of the other teams is not great. It's just not. I do think that compared to past tournaments, the athletes are better. But I don't think anything else is. You know, I love the idea of the World Games more than I actually like the World Games. You know, it's not like soccer where small nations can produce like superstar players and those guys can carry their team in a qualification and maybe, you know, get a chance for a medal. Lacrosse is just not widespread enough for that. And if you think it is, like, you got a problem. It's just not there. The development is not there. The coaching isn't there. And I don't think the talent is there for it to be anything other than Canada, Iroquois, Team USA in the top three without another country heavily borrowing from either one of those three parties to also be in that top four or five team slot. It's not possible. So I'm watching a couple of these games for Inside the Cross. It's my job. I'm going to watch them. The first game I'm watching is the first game of the tournament. It's Israel versus Jamaica. Am I looking forward to Israel versus Jamaica at 9:30 in the morning? I think you know the answer to that. But I think that the Team USA Canada games, the Team USA Iroquois games, the Canada versus Iroquois games are going to be amazing. So I'm here for those. And I don't mean to disparage you if you root for another team. You should. If you have a connection to that country in any aspect, I think it's great. I think you should go help them be better if you're a lacrosse person. That's what you should do. But it's good enough that you cheer for them and you buy their t-shirt. That's good too. It's important to be a fan of something that you love. But for me, after watching an entire summer of MLL, and before that, basically being converted into a full-time D1 analyst, where I watch only the top games because I have to talk about them on a podcast, I don't know how I go from fifth gear to second or third. Do you know what I mean? I just don't. Yeah. I don't know how that happens. We're going to find out because I'm doing the first four games. So we're going to find out. I'm going to try to be less punchy than I am right now. But I like the idea of the tournament. I like that it spreads the game. But you can't sit here and tell me those games are good. You just can't.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't imagine they will be, you know, in the neighborhood of the other games. That is a similar sort of style, the way I feel about it. It's just, I mean, not, obviously not to disparage the event or anything like that. And I mean, if you are interested in watching Israel versus Jamaica, that is awesome. Like, people need to watch things that make them happy. So, hey, dope. Good for you. If you were listening to the podcast to expect us to say, here's a list of the 500 things we're most excited about the World Games, you are surprisingly mistaken. That's probably not going to happen. But World Games is a cool event. You know, people, it's going to be fun for everybody. It seems like a lot of people are excited to go. I was just looking at my social media feed. I saw a lot of people who I didn't expect necessarily to travel that distance, but they're over there, you know, doing their thing. So, I mean, you know, good for you. If it means a lot, I'm really a big fan of things that make people happy, you know? So, hey, that's awesome. And, you know, if a big game jumps off, I'll hop on board too. There's no rules saying I can't get involved later. Right. So we'll right. see.
Yeah. I mean, there's a certain percentage of my opinion that's colored by the fact that I'm not there, but not for public consumption. All right. We're going to close this out as we do every week with our MVPs of the week. Chris, who is your MVP this week?
My MVP of the week is divided amongst an entire group. It is the Thai rescue team, a whole bunch of Thai Navy SEALs and volunteers and parents and all those people that got those 12 kids and their coach, I believe they're a soccer team, out of the cave in Thailand
where they were stuck in all that flooded waters. They got them out without anybody dying or anything like that. Story taking an awful turn. Nobody ate each other or anything like that. They all got out, worked together. So it was a good time. Obviously, being in a cave wasn't a good time. That's not what I mean. But, you know, it was a good time that everybody could get out, happy ending, celebrating, and people came together. Which is kind of a weird concept. A little quick off-ramp turn here. I just read an article about it, and somebody was saying, like, oh, I'm so happy we could all come together regardless of race or religion. And, like, just an editorial. Yeah, if somebody's stuck in a cave, help them get out of the cave. Like, I don't need to know anything else about you. Maybe I don't want to be on a high horse here, but I feel like you should just help people get out of caves if they're stuck in caves.
I mean,
that's just me.
Preventative maintenance is also plays a role in this. Don't go in a cave.
Let's go with that too. Yeah, I'm going to say my LVP, negative shout out to the guy who said, "Hey fellas, let's all go in a cave." And they were like 2 miles in a cave. 2 miles is too far to go in a cave. So if you learn anything from this podcast, yeah, like my man just said, don't go in caves.
Have you not seen The Descent or The Descent 2? There's things in caves, dude. But what is the best thing that can happen in a cave?
You
nothing.
Leave.
No, you can leave the cave. Yeah, good
That's
call.
It.
All right, my MVP this week are the fans. You know, we referenced it a little bit talking to Kyle earlier. Chris and I have been writing about the MLL for a long, long time. And I got to be honest, I don't think I've had this much positive interaction with the MLL fan base in forever. So shout out to you, listener. You're my MVP this week. So make sure to stick with us when we take a break to accommodate the World Games, as we said before. But, you know, keep reading the content that's coming your way during that tournament. Chris and I will still be churning out articles. I'm recapping the first four games and live tweeting for Inside the Cross, starting with Jamaica versus Israel in the first game. And guys, don't worry, that Cannons retrospective is well on the way. People don't forget. That's all I'm going to say about that. So yeah, that's going to do it for us. You can find me on social media, on Twitter and Instagram at @vkyledevitt. Chris, where can they grab you?
Twitter at ChrisRosie22, Instagram at Chris Rosenthal, and Spotify people at ChrisRosie22.
All right. Once again, thanks for listening. We appreciate you. Have a great weekend.